Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I'm your host, Brian Scott. And today, we finally return to Robert Stone and one of his most important and amazing books, unlike any of his other books that we have gone over. This one talks about aliens and is called How to Benefit from the Coming Alien Arrivals. And we get so much information. He gives some information on possible remote viewings of our future, in addition to a discussion of what that means and the possibility of aliens coming to our planet, what the Galactic Council is like, and how to deal with these oncoming aliens. Now, some of it is just contemplation, and some of it is based on some insider knowledge. It's very interesting. He claims that many remote viewers have looked into our future, and a lot of his stuff with the Silva method is very connected to remote viewing. And there is just a wasteland for us in the future, about 300 years. But he believes that we have the ability to change the future, that it is not locked in, that we can adapt and change. And so there are other aliens that are trying for us to go through a shift so that we can change it. Or what we're viewing in the future, another thing I was thinking is that it could be that we just don't understand what we're seeing, that we're only seeing the 3D Earth, and the 4D Earth is not what they're actually remote viewing. But there's some interesting information here, and he goes over some additional sources as books written by Courtney Brown and discusses some other works. So I found this very interesting, and I'm going to go through some of the stuff that I found from this book, but I highly recommend that you check it out. It's called How to Benefit from the Coming Alien Arrivals. Chapter 1. What is known but up until now kept secret. We approach the most awesome and explosive development in recorded human history. There are people who will not be affected to such a degree. You are one. You won't be affected as others will be, because the purpose of this book is to reveal secrets to you ahead of other people in a way that will ease the impending shock while enabling you to consciously prepare for some life-changing developments. Extraterrestrial will be arriving on this planet soon, if they have not already arrived. Intelligent sources claim that they arrived centuries ago and their descendants are living south of the United States border. A more recent contingent is living underground in New Mexico. These information sources will be identified later as we progress into this fascinating adventure. A quarter century ago, I took a mind training course that enabled me to project my intelligence to any place on Earth in order to detect information. To do so, there needed to be a problem to solve. The more critical the problem, the more successful this ability. So, working mentally to heal somebody's health problem became the most practical application of this mental skill. There are now millions of graduates of this training around the world. Occasionally, something was observed while projecting one's intelligence to a distant, sick person, and that observation later confirmed. I saw a green ring on the night table. Yes, that's where I always keep my emerald ring at night. However, these confirmations were rare, and accuracy of remote viewing when attempted then was estimated of only 75% to 80%. An agency of the U.S. government quietly took the ball and began to run with it. By adding several elements to this training, accuracy was perfected. In fact, it became 100% accurate. Remote viewing became scientific remote viewing. Using it for espionage became a tried and found to be true method, a method that could be used in ways that most scientists are still too shocked to totally accept. Private practitioners to investigate other planets, other realms, and other eras have now used scientific remote viewing. The exciting, dramatic, shocking, and enlightening findings unfold on the pages ahead, not with the purpose of implementing these emotions, but rather with the purpose of enabling you to be prepared for them, and even to elevate your consciousness and better your life as they actually happen. The time is now. The advanced media blitz that is now making angels and aliens common words. As I write this, our public television station needed a 3-minute filler. On the screen came a close-up flyover of Mars, sponsored by NASA. without so much as a by your leave. Viewers were suddenly a captive audience to the valley's plateau, hills, and canyons of this distant planet for that 3 minutes. No explanation, no commentary, no follow-up, at least for now, but expect a multimedia ongoing exposure to Mars in order to prepare us for something big happening and having to do with Mars and Martians. Also, as I write this, a commentator on one of the country's largest radio networks has announced the viewing of a green fireball by a foreign commercial pilot. The pilot saw it over East Mauritius on Long Island, where an airliner had exploded over the ocean months before. Other pilots had reported this, including such a report the night of that airliner explosion. There's nothing new about an approaching comet being publicized in the press. Exploiting such an oncoming event has been standard practice, despite past letdowns and expected visibility. When the new millennium arrived on January 2001, it spawned a multitude of Chicken Littles announcing hysterically that the world was ending, or the last days, as predicted in the Bible, had come. But as you are exposed to a media blitz about Mars, UFOs, the comet, or alien kidnappings, look for some indicator that might point to a controlled campaign of preparation. Is it broad in coverage? Using UFOs as an example, there are continued reports of sightings in many places, reports that might have been squashed in the past and passed off as weather balloons or swamp gas, but now, with more serious researchers in the field, increasing numbers of citizens are paying attention. Is it blatantly educational in its thrust? An example being the fill-in showing the Mars terrain on educational television mentioned above. Have you wondered why angels are enjoying a wave of popularity in the last few years? Best-selling books, a popular primetime television network show, magazine articles, all create a flap of angel wings that surround us. A film entitled Unlikely Angel was released in late 1996. It is about an emotionally troubled family which is united by a kindly angel. It is one of the several recent movies involving angels. Another at that time was The Preacher's Wife, about an angel sent to help a preacher. As a metaphysicist and lay researcher in psychotronics, I have been interested for decades in these messengers of the Creator. I wrote a book recently on how to enlist the help of angels, and this was not the first book on angels published by my publisher. This angel phenomenon points to other possible sponsors of the apparent preparation of the consciousness of America, and probably the world, for an approaching more intimate introduction to aliens. An information blitz may not be our government. Before I propose the possibility of other than government sponsorship of an extraterrestrial life campaign, let me point to one of science's new paradigms. Based on the Newtonian understanding of the universe, you and I are human beings trying to be spiritual. But based on findings in this post-Einsteinian age, especially concepts we now have about energy, string theories, and such, you and I are spiritual beings trying to be human. Angels are also spiritual human beings, but they are not trying to be human. Occasionally, they do manifest as human to us. Instance after instance has been informally reported where helpful persons along the road have a moment later mysteriously disappeared. According to every major religion in the world, angels exist as messengers or helpers to the Creator. Could it be the Creator, through angels and other spiritual means, who is preparing us for an extraterrestrial experience? Other spiritual means might also be the extraterrestrials themselves. Just as we humans are expressions of the Creator, so are the Martians and space beings from distant galaxies, no matter how many billions of light years away. According to at least one practitioner of scientific remote viewing, extraterrestrials can be mentally probed and in turn can do the mental probing. One instance of this is specified the creation of Star Trek episodes and possibly the Star Wars series. A recent report from Washington's Education Department aimed at helping people respond to a changing world contains a section on preparing diverse populations, including new immigrants, to participate in American society, whether immigrants are from Laos or Mars. Participation in a strange society does not come easily, yet is absolutely essential if violence is to be avoided. continuing to use Mars and Martians as an example or expression, whatever may have caused their planetary exodus in the past is certainly becoming progressively critical. If it were at the point of forcing action today or in the near future, their need to be peacefully received on Earth would require a massive effort at brain influencing. Any aliens thinking of a visit to planet Earth today know that it is equivalent to death. The consciousness of humanity has not developed to the point where it can exchange beads, only scalps. Still, the growth of consciousness can be encouraged and even activated by the Creator or angels, earthling leaders, or by other space entities, Martians included. The growth of consciousness then and now. History is in reality the study of the growth of consciousness. Its study enables us to see how mankind has progressed from bestiality to humanity. Paleontology and archaeology go back even further to study the growth and origin of life itself. It is said, if one does not study the lessons of the past must be relived. Certainly, the past is a slow-moving classroom when we quickly forget our lessons. Take such vivid moments of the past as two presidential assassinations, Lincoln and Kennedy. They were 100 years apart, yet they have unmistakable signs of continuity through apparent coincidence that point to the Creator's giving these lines of history the equivalent of underlining and exclamation points. Here are some examples. Note that there are 7 letters in each name. Lincoln had the legality of his election contested. So did Kennedy. They both were involved in civil rights issues. Lincoln was elected in 1860, Kennedy in 1960. Their successors were both named Johnson. Andrew Johnson, born 1808, Lyndon Johnson, born 1908. Both Johnsons were Southern Democrats who had previously served in the U.S. Senate, and their names each contained 13 letters. And that's only the beginning. Both Lincoln and Kennedy were slain on a Friday in the presence of their wives. Their murderers, Booth and Oswald, were both Southerners and were themselves murdered before their trial. John Wilkes Booth, Lee Harvey Oswald, each contained 15 letters. Would you believe that Lincoln's secretary was named Kennedy and Kennedy's secretary was named Lincoln? Each secretary had a premonition of tragedy. Lincoln's secretary warning him not to go to the theater. Kennedy's secretary warning him not to go to Dallas. And to top it all off, the bodies of Lincoln and Kennedy were carried on the same caisson. Is this a game? Or is there some serious intent behind such a series of unlikely resemblances? Some people think that there are no such things as coincidences, that they are really creations of God unsigned. Certainly, these two presidents' assassinations are tied together, despite the century between them, for some spiritual, philosophical, or educational reason. The Creator's classroom is the universe, and each class session can take an eon. But so can the classroom be a country like ours, where each lesson can take an instant. The slowest and fastest learners among us. Every educational system has to be geared to fit the learners it is aimed at. A campaign to educate Americans to be able to peacefully handle the arrival of aliens must necessarily be aimed at all ages. Children learn faster than adults do. These fast learners are also the ones least likely to upset the good neighbor's apple cart, so it is tempting to let their education slide until the rest of us are totally informed. However, no matter who is conducting this accelerated exposure to the possibility of aliens on planet Earth, they would do well to include our children's media and programs. There is such a backlog of fear and violence in children's past entertainment programs that they are likely to need more reprogramming of their mindsets than adults. Fortunately, children remain the fastest learners among us. An infant's brain is now understood to form 3 billion new synapses or connections a second, until by the time the infant is only 8 months old, its brain has 1,000 trillion of these connections, all available for learning. However, if this learning is not forthcoming by the time the child is age 10, half of these synapses disappear from lack of use. This new understanding of the human brain's learning ability is slowly seeping into parents and the educational system's awareness. Were they to step up the parade of new experiences afforded the infant, later IQ could be increased by up to 20%. Our children will be slated for more galactic experiences than the rest of us, and therefore need to be even more thoroughly acclimated to the concepts of alien life that do we adults, especially to concepts quite opposite to those induced by former popular and destructively oriented films as Independence Day and Mars Attacks. Once a child's brain is fully developed biologically, the more likely is that child to develop higher self-esteem, a more amicable approach to others, and positive attitudes. Parents are advised to seriously devise games, toys, and other play experiences for infants in order to prepare them for friendly aliens. Example, instead of a Barbie-type doll, an extraterrestrial being in doll form. Instead of a teddy bear, a teddy being. The rest of us have to make the best possible use of the existing brain synapses. We can make no new ones. We have to impose on our existing knowledge new knowledge. Considering the brain functions as a computer, we have to deprogram and reprogram it. Instructions for accomplishing this are supplied in easy-to-do steps on the pages ahead. The consciousness of Americans has been attuned to the Force. Hopefully the media blitz has already begun to do this, but this can only be a beginning. Our understanding of an invasion is solidly ingrained in our computer as an unfriendly act. Even Africans who are subjected to violence in their own country by their own revolutionists and who take refuge in other neighboring countries are usually considered the same as invaders and are segregated and subjected to violence. Considering the state of American consciousness at the present writing and now when education via media blitz has only just begun, the invasion of extraterrestrials would be marked by military confrontation. This could be disastrous to Earthlings. What little is known about extraterrestrial scientific development is still astonishing. They seem so far advanced beyond us that we cannot understand how they travel through space. How then could we understand their ability to transport us aboard their space vehicles, or how they defend themselves against the likes of us? It might be elementary for them to deactivate our transportation, including armored vehicles and tanks, to silence our guns, and to render unworkable our missiles. This would not be their original intent, according to scientific remote viewing, which has the ability to penetrate minds as well as matter. They are in trouble. Their planet has had environmental disasters that threaten their existence. Their migration to another planet is for survival, not conquest. They come for help, not hindrance. Such was not the thrust of the famous Orson Welles radio program in the late 1930s. That fictionalized an alien invasion in such a realistic and militaristic way that people ran from their homes and gathered in public places for protection. The same program would quite likely cause the same reaction today, and a military alert would add to the polarity of the situation. Knowing our behavior through the years of observation, the aliens would be prepared, and instead of a galactic cooperation, there would likely be a galactic confrontation. Can you see the scoreboard of such a combat? Home team loses, visitors win. Other events that point to possible alien development. The fact that NASA launched two vehicles to Mars in late 1996 within weeks of each other is certainly indicative of a pregnant purpose. Reports of their findings are still being analyzed. A number of meetings and seminars have been held in the past in which astronauts, pilots, and others who had experiences with UFOs and aliens have shared these instances and told of their impressions, interpretations, and expectations. It is easy to magnify these events when one has a fixed view of an impending development. But I have disciplined myself and helped others of like mind to do the same. Synchronicity of some events is just too pointed to ignore. Take the current development of so-called nuclear bomb monitors, a comprehensive test ban treaty signed by 130 nations, including the United States, was implemented and compliance enforced with an international monitoring system, IMS. IMS detects nuclear blasts, but it does a lot more. Besides consisting of seismographs that detect underground and underwater nuclear explosions, it contains infrasound devices that pick up the rumble of distant blasts, as well as detecting meteors or other space matter entering the Earth's atmosphere. Coincidence? Unlikely. Much of our country's top secret research is devoted to travel in space. There is no doubt that some of the UFO sightings and even mishaps have yielded important information that has launched us on a scientific exploration of new ways of propulsion in space that will one day make our rocket system seem like wind-up toys. Other studies, activities, and research efforts are now in place that would be quickly turned to space exigencies. A recent National Commission on Civic Renewal is aimed at the nation's moral decline. Its modus operandi of assessing the nature and extent of this moral fall and inventing a number of correctives could be easily adapted to assessing the nature and extent of American and Martian social standoff or conflicts and devising corrective procedures. Now, I believe that Robert Stone is using Martian to denote any alien. Just remember that. So similarly, he says, our race relations activities are being given new blood. These activities are ready to be refocused on wider differences that could result from mass transportation of aliens to this planet. More about the nature of the problems that could arise and the tools already in place to handle them as we proceed. There are many more steps in contingency plans that are not showing themselves due to the tight curtain of secrecy that has been maintained. There needs to be a gradual unfolding of the stark and amazing truth already known to our authorities. Life on Mars, now known to have been possible, must not be divulged in one grand explosion of information, but rather in more digestible information steps. First, the public was allowed to know that primitive forms of life, single-celled organisms, have been located in Martian meteor fragments that landed on Earth. These fragments have been around for decades and examined again and again. Why now? Maybe by the time these pages are in your hands, the next segments of the monumental secret will be revealed, perhaps structures on Mars. Then maybe humanoid life on Mars, communication with aliens on Mars, past visitations by aliens from Mars. Martians already here. Sorry about such a fast progression of this information, but I don't think you need to be protected. Just advised to how to handle this new concept of a living universe. What has now appeared on the edge of our knowledge. There's no cabinet member in Washington who is specifically in charge of alien relations, but there should be. That extraterrestrial secretary should have a direct line to our delegate at the United Nations. What is on the verge of happening is the integration of a people from Mars or elsewhere in space with people on Earth. This is not a simple social problem akin to race relations. Differences are like cracks in a sidewalk compared to the Grand Canyon. Some of the possibilities include learning to live with beings that might know your thoughts, might even be able to turn your consciousness on and off. Our own meager attempts to zero in on the nature of the Martians, for example, and the nature of their planetary problem, limited largely to the efforts of our practitioners of scientific remote viewing, point to a deteriorating Martian environment that has forced Martians to live below the surface of their planet for centuries. Their science is exotic compared to ours. It enables them to engage in mass interplanetary travel. The apparent reason for their not having decided to escape more totally to Earth is that their advanced contingents have found you and me to entail more risk than they face at home. Still, they know our minds well enough to feel there is a growth of consciousness taking place. Perhaps with the assistance of our shared creator that would enable interplanetary peoples to live together. If a mixture of cultures produces an offspring more advanced than that of any that went into the mixture, on which our immigration policy has been based, then a Martian influx could elevate the quality of life of both peoples. Without a high level of diplomacy and wisdom, such a mixture of peoples would be disastrous for one or both. The type of leaders needed to avoid conflict. If I had the responsibility of appointing an extraterrestrial secretary to serve on the president's cabinet, I would name Carl Sagan, the late Carl Sagan. Carl Sagan reached for the stars and helped us to understand them. He could explain complex matters simply. He saw a joy, beauty, and a sense of meaning in all things, while his colleagues in modern science saw only random accidents and cold principles. In 1973, his Cosmic Connections, an Extraterrestrial Perspective, was published. In 1978, he won the Pulitzer Prize for Literature with his Dragons of Eden, Speculations on the Evolution of Human Intelligence. In 1930, a television show co-written with his wife, Anne Druyan, Cosmos, aired in 13 installments and became the most watched limited series in the history of American television up until that time. A companion book of the same title was named one on the New York Times bestseller list for 15 weeks and 55 more weeks lower on that list. Carl Sagan warned in his writings that one day the sun would have heated up so as to dissipate the atmosphere of Earth. We would barely be ready then, he warned, to leave the solar system and find another planet to keep our species alive. Before he died, he closely followed details about the rock from Mars and the possibility of a primitive life having existed on that planet. He was the perfect scientist idealist to lead us diplomatically and safely through the most challenging event in human history. More about scientific remote viewing. Although I am experienced in the Silva method as a Silva method lecturer and trainer, the first mind training to develop the projecting of one's intelligence, I am not a scientific remote viewer. In fact, I'm only superficially aware of the training elements that contribute to this amazing ability, reportedly side transcendental meditation and out-of-body experiences. There are now sources available as well as courses relating to scientific remote viewing so that anyone who wishes can learn to do it. It first came to the public's attention several years ago in an early book, Cosmic Voyage, by scientific remote viewer Courtney Brown, PhD. Its cover explanation states a scientific discovery of extraterrestrials visiting Earth. Dr. Brown is an associate professor of political science at Emory University. He has held the Charles Grove Haynes Professorship at UCLA and was a Hewlett Fellow at the Carter Presidential Center. He specializes in environmental politics, elections, and nonlinear mathematical modeling of social phenomena. If you expect an explanation for me on the latter, let it go. I need one myself. However, having read Cosmic Voyage several times, I am convinced that Courtney Brown would be a valuable advisor to our future extraterrestrial cabinet secretary, as he is a competent practitioner of scientific remote viewing, which he describes in basically the following way. Brown was trained in scientific remote viewing by a former member of a U.S. military unit that practiced this skill once it had been developed by the military. Once ability possessed only by gifted individuals, scientific remote viewing is now a dependable viewing tool that transcends both space and time. Cosmic Voyage traces Brown's findings through a number of monitored sessions, which were largely devoted to examining the ways of two extraterrestrial civilizations. One is the Martians going back tens of thousands of years until the present. The other is a civilization called the Greys. Brown states that other civilizations were observed, that he chose the Martians and the Greys because they were playing a significant role in affecting planet Earth at the present time. The role of the Greys appeared to be intertwined with both Martians and Earthlings. But as Brown himself will admit, his own remote viewing leaves many questions about the Greys unanswered. The Greys have a unique appearance, closer to the way extraterrestrials are depicted in movies. They are the beings most commonly described by Americans who've experienced mysterious kidnappings by occupants of UFOs. Brown uses remote viewing to observe a UFO abduction, to investigate the Grey mind, to check out the cause of the collapse of the early Grey civilization, and to analyze the Greys' relationship with a galactic federation. There are few conclusions, as the subject is so vast and involves time and space flexibilities that are totally strange to us. New scientific approaches to the unscientific. Suffice it is to say that Brown's books have broken not just new ground, but unheard of ground. My book that you are holding leans on other authorities besides Brown. One example is a popular radio commentator. Every night across North America, millions tune in to over 300 or more radio stations to listen to late-night talk show host Art Bell. His guests have included astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, a founder of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, well-known astronomers, celestial mechanics experts, archaeologists, as well as science experts in other fields, callers, imply them with questions, confirm their findings, and challenge their experience. Why all this excitement? The guests are discussing anomalies in their fields of expertise: UFOs, NASA photos of puzzling areas on Mars, evidence of life on other planets, messages coded in the crop circles, the shaft in the Great Pyramid, and other topics where the answers are unknown to the general public, but possibly known by others. As I write, sources come my way. I am convinced that as I write, help is provided. In my entire over 80 published books, I have never gone to a library to do research. As I progressed from home to body to mind to spirit, this help became more apparent. Whereas it could throw a person to whom it may come for the first time, I've come to expect it, to love it, to appreciate it and invite it. My invitation is not answered by a voice saying, "Here we go, Bob." Rather, it comes in the form of a newspaper item, radio, and television pronouncements, and through other people. Occasionally, it comes directly to my mind. Brown writes that Star Trek authors were quite likely affected this way. I believe it, although I don't claim to be another Delphi Oracle. I'm not just Joe Blow. I have activated my right brain hemisphere enough to be a channel for information from universal sources. Unscientific if you get right down to it, but science will be a long time catching up to a Courtney Brown, as it was a long time acknowledging Carl Sagan, which science did fairly recently. Science has its self-imposed limitations. It can start only with the Big Bang and is helpless to deal with what came before it. Scientists can work with their own observations, but not with the observations of non-scientists. Despite the adding of the word scientific to remote viewing, few scientists accept it. Perhaps reviewing how Brown does it and others will convince readers that Martians are already here and more are coming. Scientific remote viewing allows a person's unconscious mind to communicate with the conscious mind. In order to prevent conscious interference with the findings of the unconscious, a second person acts as a monitor and provides the target. The target is merely a set of numbers which have been assigned to that target and previously recorded in a computer. In other words, the remote viewer does not consciously know the target. The remote viewer reports data to the monitor, who records it. Should the remote viewer begin to make subjective comments, advice to go on to further objective viewing is quickly given by the monitor. The remote viewer is encouraged to sketch the viewed buildings, etc., rather than attempt to describe them with words. There are now many individuals trained in scientific remote viewing. I am not one of them, but am familiar enough with the process that I have implicit confidence in its dependability. Brown was always on target. He was permitted to ask his monitor what the target was when the session was at its end. Once, he reported he was looking right into the president's face and asked his monitor what the target was. The monitor replied, the Oval Room of the White House. The purpose of alien arrivals, peaceful or warlike. Things are not as they seem to be. This is not merely to say that stars are not star-shaped and red objects are not red, just rejecting red light. It is to say that the so-called real world is not the real world at all. It is a phenomenon. Solid matter is not solid. There is, relatively speaking, the same amount of space between the electron of a material atom and the nucleus around which it rotates as there is between Earth and Moon compared to their sizes. Religions speak of heaven or nirvana, where our souls go when our body gives up. Scientists throw up their hands at this. Heaven is nowhere observable, and so, scientifically speaking, it does not exist. Although today they admit to energy having consciousness, the non-local mind it is named. But scientific remote viewing sees more completely. It transcends microscopes and telescopes. It even crosses into other realms that are quite beyond the realm of science, or possibly even lay comprehension. One remote viewer states he has observed frequently alive people still living in what he calls subspace. With all due respect, I consider that to be a misnomer. It is more like superspace. In that connection, this viewer also visited Jesus, Buddha, and God. I won't be commenting on those mental explorations, not because they contain no valuable concepts. They are enlightening beyond words, but because they do not contribute to the purpose of this book, to help you be prepared for changes that may occur when aliens openly visit this planet. As such, I will not be preparing you for likely defense against physical force or armed attack. I will be preparing you for mental force or mental attack, but also for gaining new facets in the enjoyment of life, adding new dimensions to the quality of your life, and rising to a new level of spirituality. Peaceful in one way, warlike in another. Americans are finding out that one of the major causes of the troubles of our society, crime, greed, drugs, and immorality, is the deterioration of the family. The looseness of this basic unit certainly contributes to the looseness of larger units. Localities, cities, races, and religions extrapolate, and these troubles extend to entire countries and humanity itself. Why not also to visiting aliens? If it does, then history will change. Instead of a peaceful integration of the people of two planets, with less developed of these planetary people benefiting in countless ways from other people, there will be a subjugation of the less developed people and a probable sacrifice of their creator's most valuable gift next to life itself, free will. In the case of the peoples of Mars and the people of Earth, which do you suppose is less developed? So it is absolutely mandated for you and I to mature spiritually at an accelerated pace from today on. There are no medications at pharmacies, no supplements at health food stores to help us, nor special diets. What it takes is a diet for our consciousness and exercises for our consciousness. Diet and exercise applied to consciousness has a name. It is called metaphysics. The prefix meta is Greek, meaning over. Over physics is a way of saying it is not within physics. However, I have taught metaphysics around the world for the past few decades, and what may have not been within physics when I started is well within the scope of accepted physics today. But that's irrelevant. Being one of the first recipients of a doctorate degree in psychotronics, the study of the energy of consciousness, the application of metaphysics, albeit a monstrosity to classical scientists, is a boon to the average open-minded person. With its use, and with only a few hours of training, the following has been demonstrated: the ability to see human auras and interpret the meaning of the colors, the ability to hold an object and subjectively detect information about its owner, the ability to receive a concept or a word from a sender through thought transference, the ability to mentally block the accuracy of kinesiology, muscle reaction to physical detrimental substances, the ability to detect when other person's thoughts are directed at you. Some other metaphysical abilities learned in only a few hours of training, but not demonstrable in a classroom, are protecting you from the negative or evil thoughts of others, investing an object with the energy of your consciousness to act as a good luck talisman, deflecting harmful thoughts so they return to the sender. Martians in all likelihood will come in peace, but flashpoints will be low. Some of these metaphysical abilities will be explained on the pages ahead, where there is a possibility that they can be useful. According to scientific remote viewing, the Martians will be arriving with peaceful intentions, but just one trigger-happy person can change that peace into conflict that can make short work of Earth people. The timing of alien arrival. What few aliens have already arrived to stay have been from Mars, according to some remote viewing sessions. The apparent reason for the small number is the lack of readiness of Americans, especially the scarcity of capable negotiators at this planetary level of contact. A page of a remote viewing book is devoted to directing readers how to make contact with the veiled intent of recruiting individuals who not only seek to be trained, but who might have the special abilities and qualities to represent the human race in planetary negotiations. Did I hear somebody suggest finding such super diplomats in our own foreign service? That reminds me of the story of the school class that had been given a list of countries and asked to check those in which they had believed elephants could be found. One girl wrote at the bottom of her paper, "This is a silly question. Elephants are much too big to get lost in the first place." The way most of our foreign diplomats are recruited via political reward negates the chances of any giants among men being identified. A hooker in Waikiki, easily identifiable in her short, tight skirt and her look-at-me strut, approaches a Japanese tourist and starts hustling him in fluent Japanese. Her language skill is really unnecessary, as she could get her message across even if the tourist is from outer space. So it is that an individual with the right conscious intent can engage successfully in arranging peaceful coexistence of Martians and Earthlings. It is written all over their brain waves and reflected even more clearly than what is reflected by a short, tight skirt. Aliens will time their arrival to take place after a significant elevation of American consciousness. The probable effect of internet on timing. The vast expansion of the dissemination of information afforded by computers and the likes of internet would appear to be a catalyst in the growth of consciousness. It is the opinion of this observer that the opposite is true. Look past its obvious assets, the storage of an easy access to limitless data, and what do you see? A battleground between scientists and pseudoscientists, suckers and seers, psychics and psychotics, to sort out fact from fiction. Thousands of human contacts are arranged through internet every day, leading one to believe that the scope of life experience is vastly enlarged, but these events are neither human nor contacts. They are synthetic connections. They are a substitute for the real thing. Only the real thing, meaningful person-to-person relationships, can lead to personal growth. The probable effect of the internet on the timing of a rapprochement between the peoples of two planets is negative. Well, what then would serve as a positive effect? Look away from the computer screen and in the opposite direction, and what do you see? You see the heavens. They can broaden your horizons and expand your consciousness. To Carl Sagan, the skies were a never-ending source of wonder and awe and served to trigger this wonder and awe among peoples all over the earth, not just the 500 million in 60 countries who viewed the television show Cosmos. The more we become space-oriented, the sooner we will be ready for the space people. It is an important step, but not the only one. We also need to be earth-oriented. The Martians were helped by the Greys to leave their planet and come to this one. The reason for their departure, according to scientific remote viewing, was the destruction of their atmosphere by some cosmic disturbance, not by their own mistreatment. It would be fleeing from the frying pan to seek haven in the fire if they were to escape to a planet itself in the process of being destroyed. Is the consciousness of Americans ready to prevent further rape of our land? The probable effect of conservation on timing. In developing countries, the cycle of cut and plant has been a necessity to the survival of their people. Expanding populations have required more food, and the only solution has been to sacrifice forests for farms. There are signs of some governments in Africa and South America conducting educational campaigns to offer less damaging alternatives, but life in developing countries such as the United States appears to be the choice of the Martians, which is the mental state of Americans today, especially regarding conservation. After a century of exploitation of nature's resources, American consciousness is what counts. Here in the U.S., indications may appear positive. Our air is improved, if not our water and forests are being replanted as fast as they are being cut. If we can use the November 1996 elections as a barometer of public sentiment regarding what the Native Americans call sacred and what the Native Hawaiians call aina, or that which feeds us, it appears that Americans are moving closer to those native and wiser beliefs as we become more aware of the effects of pollution. In Gainet County, a fast-growing area outside of Atlanta, Georgia, voters said yes to a penny sale tax, which would raise $100 million for park acquisition and trails, as well as money for other capital improvements. New York State voters said yes to a huge $1.7 billion bond to protect our parklands and open space and improve watersheds. Dade County, Florida, adopted a $200 million bond issue to provide more protected green space, wildlife protection, and neighborhood parks. Los Angeles County in California upped the ante to $319 million for these same conservation purposes. And so it was throughout the United States, with a few exceptions. Joining the Save the Land movement were also Rhode Island voters with a yes to $14 million in bonds for open space and farmland, a $995 million yes in California for San Francisco Bay Delta restoration, and a nod from Missouri voters to a sales tax specifically aimed at soil conservation and more state parks. The rest of us appear to be supporting these votes with our own increasing attention to recycling and reducing waste. Still, we have a ways to go, and appreciative extraterrestrializer upon us. A preview of galactic politics. There's several other chapters that go deeper into the changes that are coming and preparing the planet for the coming shift and helping aliens to survive on Earth. Whole variety of different explorations of really interesting topics, and I recommend that you read it. It's sort of a guidebook of what we need. I wanted to read a little bit from the chapter on a preview of galactic politics. If you have followed my channel, you know in the Law of One material, it talks about the confederation of planets, and this sounds very much like they're talking about the same galactic federation. So this story is told about Ben Hogan, a great professional golfer. After winning one of his many tournaments, a reporter asked him, "How is it, Mr. Hogan, when the pressure is greatest, you come through with a miraculous shot?" "I guess I'm just lucky," he said. "But you're constantly practicing." "True. The more I practice, the luckier I get." Even if this was a stretch of the truth, it became the truth after he said it. He was affirming with desire that it be so, belief that it was so, and expectation that it would continue to be so. As we explore the nature of galactic politics in this chapter, we will pause now and then for you to affect your life for the better with an affirmation: practice makes perfect. Yes, even to play a better game of golf. In reviewing the politics of space colonization, we cannot cite examples handed to us by history. There are none. So we have to start at home, with the biggest spaces being the space between the White House and Congress, and the space between the electors and the candidates for election. Dr. Courtney Brown states in Cosmic Voyage that the Galactic Federation was mentioned by abductees and so became a natural objective for scientific remote viewing. The Federation was not among galaxies, but among members of our own galaxy. When Brown viewed a meeting of galactic representatives, he sensed that they knew he was there, and they declared his visit an official act, making him a member. He claimed he was told that humans would soon move off Earth, but they would have to become less violent and troublesome at first. Asking whom he should visit by scientific remote viewing, he said he was told to limit such visits to the Martians. Obviously, from subsequent remote viewing forays, the Martians are in our future by the shortest time element, if indeed any more time exists. In discussing his viewing of the Galactic Federation, Brown leaves it up to the reader to evaluate the event. My own feelings are a sort of confirmation that we need to elevate our consciousness if we are to deal with other galactic life. Indeed, that is what Brown concludes, but he calls it a better understanding of consciousness. Certainly, that is at least part of what is needed. Earth politics as a starting point. It is inconceivable that any agreements made with aliens by the United States will be accepted without some protest. The president stands to be opposed by Congress, either by the House or by the Senate, or by both. A state may exercise its jurisdiction being physically involved and clash politically with the federal government. Localities right down to the villages may protest decisions regarding aliens which trod on their rights. Even individuals who are involved can make such protests, and these protests can be violent or peaceful. Despite agreement all the way down the line, there can be still political unrest. Any indication of this would likely be played up by the press on front pages rather than relegated to the inside pages, assuming they continue to find that such controversy helps to sell newspapers. The playwrights of the television show Extraterrestrials, mentioned in the previous chapter, based the entire plot not so much on the nature of the signals being received from outer space, but rather on the delay in releasing their decoded message to the public. Any openly applied government controls would be disastrous to public opinion and public cooperation. What do I think? I bow to the political experience. But there is still one major unknown in the formula: the extraterrestrials' abilities. These may be political abilities, but they may also be mental abilities that control the climate of both individual and mass opinion. The possible problems within the Galactic Federation. It would be ideal if whatever happened in the way of gray-assisted Martian relocation to Earth, it was a galactic decision and agreed to by all concerned parties. All the concerned parties, what a broad statement that one is. Perhaps the broadest statement ever made by a self-help writer. Because here, all the concerned parties would be separated by billions and billions of miles, even light years. A dissident could be a planet or a solar system. It could be actively opposed to or resigned to whatever migration is taking place. If actively opposed, that activity could be distant or closer at hand. We do not know, nor can we imagine in advance, what their hostile capabilities at a distance are. Since politics is largely based on power, we are politically ignorant when it comes to this type of intergalactic show of strength, but we can find out now what to do. Undoubtedly, the training of more specialists in scientific remote viewing has been continuing in recent years. Today, there are surely a number of skilled remote viewers who can be mobilized for intergalactic observation when needed. They are needed now, since they can transcend time as easily as they can transcend space. A mission to the Galactic Federation right now, but skipping to the time of decision for planetary migration is made, can determine if and from whom any active interference will be manifest. With that information, we can join the ranks of galactic politicos, demonstrating that we are masters of wheeling and dealing. Stone goes on to discuss politics, talking about power versus paralysis in politics, and then goes on to say that galactic politics may be in constant change. Reporting his findings at a recent meeting of the Astronomical Society of America in Toronto, Harry Ferguson, an astronomer at the Space Science Telescope Institute in Baltimore, noted that there are thousands of suns that belong to no galaxies. These stellar outcasts roam the vast spaces between galaxies. Hubble telescope sightings in between the Virgo cluster of galaxies, some 60 million light years away, counted 500 outcasts called red giants because they were elderly stars nearing extinction. It was reported that in this part of space alone, there could be a trillion of such stellar nomads. Should a new star drift into our galaxy with its livable planets, would the Galactic Federation require it to register in order to vote? Because its planets were not eligible voting members of the galaxy, would these planets take matters into their own hands? How might the members of the Galactic Federation then maintain galactic discipline? Space politics is not as rigid as Earth politics, especially American politics. It would be like a new land rising from the sea off Long Island and becoming quickly populated by freeloaders from Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. Each state could claim jurisdiction by the self-proclaimed landowners who probably have other ideas. They would probably demand their rights from Congress but declare themselves untaxable. Taxation without representation once caused a revolution. What would be the result of representation without taxation? We cannot lean on our past political policies where aliens are concerned, but we can be open-minded and flexible in our thinking. In that way, we can put our spiritual nature first, the greatest force we have to ensure our freedom. He goes on to talk about playing politics today in order to win for tomorrow, and has an exercise on self-image and daydreaming. Why daydreaming can be very profitable. Using your daydreaming, I recommend you check out the episode I have on daydreaming. And he has an exercise where, one, you draw a sketch of yourself like a giant, and two, parade in front of a full-length mirror, head up high, viewing your reflection as a more advanced person. This art and or reflected image of a better you will enable you to visualize or imagine in a more realistic way. It's not a one-time daydream, and he does have this throughout the book, some different exercises which talk about our own self in a way so that we can deal with aliens. And Dr. Courtney Brown discusses galactic politics and offers probably the first demonstrable proof of the existence of the human soul, or whatever aspect of the human being that survives the death of the body, projecting to what he calls subspace. Brown found beings that he could see through. They were all quite busy. They said they help people like angels do, but they are not angels. They help souls. When he did his remote viewing, these see-through beings were involved in working on serious problems that were coming to Earth in the future, which would involve different races or species. Remote viewers before Brown had also detected this subspace filled with beings trying to be of help to humans in their spiritual evolution. But the U.S. military had no way of equating this power to missiles and warheads, so it was not followed up in their training program. The galactic political picture is grandiose enough without adding an unseen factor, but there it is. Not only is it an unseen factor, but one with an unseen and unknown potential. What is the relationship between the Galactic Federation and the forces of subspace beings who were especially concerned with our imminent relationship with the Martians? He wrote that he was told the Martians would not hurt us, that we would be on Earth should we make an effort to contact them, as they were too leery of humans' readiness to take the initiatives themselves. From Brown's findings, we can assume that the cosmos is more than a two-party system. There are Earthlings, extraterrestrials, and subspace beings. This should come as depressing news for Republicans and Democrats, but there most surely will be exceptions. The advent of human galactic diplomats. Occasionally, labor management disputes are resolved by compulsory arbitration. The arbitrator listens to both sides and then mandates a resolution, usually somewhere between the two positions. The arbitrator might be considered a labor management diplomat, but this is a debasing example of a true diplomat. To view a true diplomat, one must look to higher levels of opposing views, such as those that occur at a legislative level. Leaders of legislatures have their diplomats who are able to extend the tools available to diplomacy, most of which fall within the nomenclature one hand washes the other. We see this in both houses of Congress, sometimes to the degree that the phrase congressional ethics can be called an oxymoron. It must certainly go on in the United Nations, but probably under closer wraps, the participants being career diplomats. When you consider that the arrival of Martians or any extraterrestrials would be preceded by extensive diplomacy on both sides, who will do that job? We do not have diplomats trained to serve on an interplanetary scale, much less on an interstellar or intergalactic scale. How would such a person be trained? What qualifications would such a person be required to possess? An Associated Press item, January 17, 1997, reported that in Kingsville, Texas, a man who was unhappy with the Hell in Hello campaign to get the word eliminated as a greeting, and the word Heaven-O used as a replacement. He won. The Cleburne County Commissioner unanimously adopted Heaven O as the county's official greeting. I hereby nominate that man to be one of Earth's galactic diplomats. Continuing the playing with words, a solar diplomat also must be a solar diplomat. According to Brown, and not be alone in our physical form, dwells a subspace life form which both preceded our physical form and will survive it. These subspace life forms are our souls and go on forever, he says. They exist on an active level in subspace, exerting so much influence that extraterrestrials communicate with them as a matter of course. For a resident of Earth to become an effective diplomat on a galactic level, Brown points out that the training he went through to become a scientific remote viewer would be essential. This training, he explains, involves CETI, Transcendental Meditation, the Monroe Institute's HemSync technology, and specific remote viewing techniques. Check out my episode on CIA mind control that talks about this HemSync technology. The final thing to check out is the final chapter on how to protect yourself. And a lot of this goes back to what we've already been talking about in the other Robert Stone episodes. Expanding your self-image, improving on your power and awareness, using an expansion of consciousness by relaxing yourself, using the Silva mind control method. All of these techniques are powerful. And he discusses the time factor that's involved. And at the end, he really does emphasize that we can overcome whatever differences that we might have, to not be fearful of aliens as they come. And he has one more exercise. And he says, you sit in your comfortable living room chair, you close your eyes, and you take a deep breath. And as you exhale, you remind yourself of how good it feels to relax deeply. He recommends that you do this on a regular basis as an imaging exercise to change the way that you think. So then you take another deep breath, and as you exhale, you feel heavier in the chair as you give in to gravity. And then you take a third deep breath, and as you exhale, you feel a wave of relaxation go from head to toe. Then you count backwards, slowly from 5 to 1. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And you mentally picture a beautiful rose garden. And you look closely at a red rose, then an orange rose, and a yellow rose, a green rose, and a blue rose. You look closely at the petal of a rose, where one drop of water reflects all the colors of the rainbow. And you repeat mentally, I am capable in everything I do. I am a star in the game of life. And you chant aloud the mantra Om 3 times. Om. 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 And you repeat mentally, I am godlike. I conquer obstacles. I have total confidence in myself. Mentally picture a blizzard of money coming at you. Mentally affirm every day in every way I'm getting wealthier and wealthier. I am the most valuable person I know. Mentally picture yourself standing in front of an alien. You hug the alien in appreciation of his or her creator-given strength. You become stronger that very moment. Mentally affirm, I am a person of unlimited strength. I am strong of purpose, strong of resolve, strong of courage. I respect and am respected by extraterrestrials. Mentally picture a serene lake standing at its edge. Look at the reflection of yourself in the water and mentally say, I love you. Mentally affirm, I surrender to my creator, knowing that I will always be supported. Our love is mutual and everlasting. He's made a point throughout the book that it's about our own internal consciousness and how we relate and prepare for the coming alien arrivals, and it can be to our benefit. And there is a chapter that's pretty good, the glimpse at a typical Martian, for instance, and some other things that talk about language and intelligence, some interesting contemplations on what would happen if we were visited by aliens and what it will be like in the future. I love the discussion of remote viewing, and it really solidifies my own experience. Check out my remote viewing meditation, where I'm using these techniques going into subspace as described. So that particular episode is really great if you want to try remote viewing on your own, but I recommend taking some classes. And the Farview Institute is one that I really recommend. There's so many great places where you can learn about remote viewing. I would love to talk about coming alien arrivals. And I've read a lot of stuff. I haven't read as much about Martians being underground, but it's possible. Anything is possible. All things are possible. We know that we live in a crowded universe, and I can't wait to have it revealed to me. And I would hope that it happens during my lifetime, because I'm ready for it. Bring it on. I am excited for the coming alien arrivals, and I think we will all benefit, because it will mean that we've raised to a conscious level that we're open to accepting them. In the Law of One material, they say they're not coming, that we're not even close to ready to accept them. But I believe we can be. We can make this transition by continuously working on ourselves, our own abilities, and our own meditation, expanding our consciousness. And in the process, we improve ourselves as we connect to love. And when this happens, it's like a signal that says, welcome. All episodes of The Reality Revolution can be found at therealityrevolution.com. And once again, welcome to The Reality Revolution.